Welcome to Securing America with me, Frank Gaffney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to the glory of God. And we're going to have, at the very beginning of this new year, an opportunity to visit with one of my all-time favorite people. He is that because he's not only one of the most decent and, I think, funny and principled men I have known, certainly in public life, but also because he has served our country with great distinction. For 18 years in the House of Representatives, concluding this very day, as a very distinguished jurist in his native state of Texas, and not least as a captain in the United States Army. He has been throughout that very extensive career committed to the Constitution of the United States. He has, of course, repeatedly sworn an oath to protect and defend it, but he has also been at the very forefront, the vanguard of those in the Congress, yes, but also I think on the bench and in countless interviews and public addresses and the like, enunciating what the framers of our Constitution had in mind and standing for it forcefully, courageously, tenaciously, and often with very important effect. His name, as you may have figured out by now, is Louis Gohmert. He represented, until today, the First District of Texas for some 18 years, and he continues to represent all of us, I think, as a spokesman and as a visionary leader. I'm proud to call him a friend, as well as always as a guest of this program. Honorable Louis Gohmert, in every sense of the word, welcome back to Securing America, sir. Great to have you with us.
Always great to talk to you, Frank. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for your service. I regret deeply that it is at an end in this particular phase, but I know it will continue in others. And we look forward to that and the chance to collaborate with you in all of it.
Well, thank you, Frank. And there's one thing that is not well known, and I've been amused sometimes as Democrats try to act like they are the defenders of the Constitution against us ne'er-do-wells, when actually they have become so partisan they defend the Constitution depending on whom they're defending. Whereas I took that oath, as you mentioned, but not merely in the United States Army for 4 years active duty, but also as an assistant district attorney, as a district judge handling felonies, including the death penalty, as a chief justice, and obviously also Congress. But I've wondered how many of those self-declared liberals ever got appointed to defend on appeal a capital murder conviction. And in my case, I begged the judge not to appoint me, but he did. I believe in the Constitution. I believe in due process. I worked my tail off because that's the only way the system can work. And as I told our highest criminal court in Texas, in oral arguments in Austin, I'm not somebody coming in here that is against the death penalty. I'm quite for it. But before you do that, you have got to assure that due process occurred. And in my client's case, he didn't get due process. And therefore, this case must be reversed. And I got it reversed. And, you know, the hundreds and hundreds, I don't know, thousands of hours I spent on it resulted in the case being reversed. So I wondered how many liberals out there actually would do something like that just because they believed in the Constitution.
Yeah.
I do, but I get very disgusted with the hypocrisy on the other side of the aisle all too often.
Well, I think it's fair to say that most of them would have gotten him out of jail, but probably not by going through the process that you're talking about, Congressman. We've got a lot of things that I want to cover with you, and the time will fly by, I know. But let me just ask you at the outset, because it's topical. We can't say for sure what's going to happen, but as we're speaking, a vote is about to be taken, possibly a series of votes will be taken to determine who will be the Speaker of the House in the new Republican majority, 118th Congress. And I wanted to talk with you about it because this is the ultimate inside baseball. There is very little that those of us outside can do to even discern what's going on, let alone influence it. You've been a player in that inside baseball in a number of contested races, including one you challenged John Boehner yourself to run as his replacement. Just how does this work in practice, and why is it so difficult to know in advance what is actually going to happen when you have a real race?
Well, unlike national elections or even local elections, you know that there's a momentum that you can feel, whereas you know, the odds are always that the top Republican leader or Democrat leader will end up being elected as Speaker. But when you realize that, going back to early 2000 and let's see, that was early 2008 was when John Boehner got elected to be majority leader because some of Boehner's friends had been complaining to Dennis Hastert that we needed to go to a rule that they had briefly pushed, and that was to immediately remove any Republican leader from their position if they were indicted. I was brand new to Congress, but I have acted in those capacities. I've been made cases before grand juries, and I was begging our rank and file, do not vote to change this rule. It is wrong. It will allow Democrat district attorneys to make the choices of who our Republican leaders would be.
Yes.
And at first,
without them actually being found guilty formal proceeding.
Just indict them.
Yeah.
And Boehner's friends pushed that. And there was a big battle behind the scenes between Boehner and Tom DeLay, who was the majority leader. But Boehner always blamed Tom for Boehner's defeat back in the 90s as conference chair by a guy named J.C. Watts. J.C. and Tom both have laughed and said, Boehner always thought that, but it was not true. Tom wasn't the one that got J.C. to run against and defeat Boehner. But nonetheless, Boehner, one thing he was really good at was holding a grudge.
Yeah.
And before he got into the marijuana so much, but a little tongue in cheek. But anyway, Boehner got the rule changed back so that if you're indicted, you're automatically out. So James Carville had just commented shortly before this that if Tom DeLay were a Democrat, they would never have lost the majority to begin with. He was the last really good conservative strong leader we had.
Democrats, as I recall, indicted him. That created the opening for John Boehner. The rest is history.
And there was no.
We have to take a short break. I want to pick up on the other side of this, back to the present race a little bit if we can.
Yes.
This is fascinating. This is what we need to know, and it'll help explain what we'll know by this time tomorrow. Yeah. Stay tuned for more right after this. Thank you. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Just before Christmas, the Democrats' January 6th committee released its final report. Predictably, that kangaroo court held Donald Trump responsible for inciting the so-called insurrection at the U.S. Capitol and recommended he be prosecuted. Given the holidays, it took some time, but eventually a remarkable revelation was discovered buried in the committee's report. It was a text sent on January 6, 2021 by Ray Epps. He's the guy captured on video, both that day and the night before, hectoring Trump supporters to, quote, go into the Capitol, unquote. At the rally on the 5th, the crowd suspected he was a provocateur and drowned him out, shouting, Fed, Fed, Fed. Epps' text reads, quote, I was in the front with a few others. I also orchestrated it, unquote. Unbelievably, he remains unindicted and at liberty. That must not stand. This is Frank Affney. Welcome back. We're visiting with the Honorable Louis Gohmert, just retired from the United States House of Representatives after 18 distinguished years of service there, member of the House Judiciary Committee and the House Natural Resources Committee during his tenure. He has been very much involved in the past in leadership elections, and we wanted to pick his brains a little bit about the race that is, as we speak, underway. And Congressman, recognizing that we can't forecast what's going to happen, I do want you to talk about why it's so hard to forecast it. And you were talking about some of the mechanics of this that gave rise to the present situation of how a speaker is elected. Walk us through that.
Boehner got elected as majority leader. And he got elected by saying, if you just elect me, this is perfect. I will have, you know, about 11 months. And if I'm not the best leader you see come November, then vote somebody else in. It's a great trial period. But we lost the majority, and he deserves some of the thanks for that in November of 2008. And he was the only one on the phone that night while we were, you know, basically felt like we'd been gut shot. He was on the phone saying, look, I didn't get a full 2 years. This isn't fair. You got to give me two more years. And people were kind of mind numb from knowing that Pelosi was about to become speaker. And they said, okay, we'll give you two more years. He's been in charge ever since. And so when we finally had the votes to keep him.
You mean long after he was removed from the speaker? Left.
Because when we had the votes and he knew we did, we came so close in January of 2015. And in fact, that's, as you mentioned, I announced I was running. I knew I had no chance. And in fact, there was an article Rick Manning wrote pointing out, I was overheard telling people, look, vote for Webster, vote for anybody. You know, Boehner will be mad, especially if you vote for me, because he hated me so much. But just we needed 29 people to vote for anybody but Boehner. That would throw it to a second round for the first time since 1923. There were nine ballots. The people that held out and didn't vote for their own party speaker were upset because all the power of the party had gone back to the speaker, gone to the speaker. And so finally, before the ninth ballot, the speaker agreed, okay, we'll get power back to the committees. We'll get power back to the individual members of Congress. And so they devolved the power he had accumulated as dictator of the House. We're back there. All that power is back to the speaker.
Back in 23, you're talking about.
Back in 1923, wow. We're now back there. And isn't it ironic? Mm-hmm. It's 100 years to the day since that happened last.
And of course, as we're speaking, Kevin McCarthy has been wheeling and dealing and promising to devolve power back to committee chairman and to get back to the rule of regular order and all the rest.
He's been very tight, Frank, about, look, until Pelosi this last time changed the rule and got her people under threat to vote for the change, there has always been what Jefferson put in, basically, and that is that any member could file a motion to vacate the chair, vacate speaker, and have an election on it. McCarthy wants that continued. The only reason
the rejection of that principle continued. He wants to not have that kind of check.
He wants to be addicted. Well, yeah. Many of us said, well, the reason Pelosi put that in is she wants to be a dictator. And basically she was.
Right.
So people are going, why is McCarthy want to do this unless he wants to be a dictator just like her?
Yeah.
So he has been insisting that he wanted to keep that rule. And many in the Freedom Caucus and outside were very alarmed by that. Mm-hmm. I knew that when I announced, it was recommended by Thomas Massey and Jim Bridenstine, because people had been saying to their constituents, said, don't vote for Boehner, vote for Gohmert. They would say, hey, I'd vote for anybody if somebody formally announced, because they knew in 200 years nobody had ever announced other than the party's nominee. And so I knew I would be hated within my own party because I made people uncomfortable that had promised I would vote for anybody if they announced. Well, I announced, and we had over 29, but there was negotiation right at the last minute by Boehner, promises made, and we lost some of our people, and we ended up with 24. So
not enough to stop it.
Kind of backroom deals. Mm-hmm. Hey, I'll make you chairman of this committee. I'll give you this committee. And look, Kevin was the one that pushed from the Republican side to get rid of Marjorie Taylor Greene's committee.
Right.
He was in lockstep thinking, oh, it'll make us look so tough against our own members. Right. No, her constituents elected her after whatever comment she had made. Mm-hmm. So that wasn't fair, but that's where we are. There's a lot of negotiating. Well, how about if I agree to this, that, or the other? But the thing is, they better put it in writing, because some, you know, Kevin, and he brags, he's a man of his word, but you got to make sure he remembers what his word was and don't end up with, I never promised you that.
Yeah.
Yes, you did. Don't you remember? No, yeah. I don't remember that. So they got to be careful whatever agreement gets reached.
It may even be that at the end of the day, we're going to see this thing come down to multiple votes and an alternative simply on the grounds that people feel they can't trust Kevin McCarthy. Well,
the way it is now,
we won't know that until tomorrow.
The way it is now, Frank, people represent maybe 800,000 people or so, but they don't get to fully represent them even in the majority party because the speaker has the power. The speaker gets to tell, or under the way it is now, tell committee chairs, you can bring this bill out of committee. You can't bring this bill out. Yeah, that's a good thing to have a hearing on. No, you don't have a hearing on that. Yeah. That's the kind of stuff that goes on.
But Louis, even more extraordinary and dictatorial is that there is pretty much regularly now a bypassing altogether of the committees. Speaker will just draft the bill and throw it on the floor and bring it to a vote. No.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Paul Ryan did that around Jeb Hensarling. Jeb wanted to reform flood control. He wanted to end the Export Import Bank. And Paul went around him on both of those, and he was chairman, and he didn't get what he wanted because Paul went around him and played, you know, the big the big game that's been played since over 100 years.
Right. And I guess that's why I think that so much is riding on this speaker's race. And personally, I won't ask you to comment on it, but I pray that the House will not elect Kevin McCarthy as the speaker. I think we need fresh blood. We need leadership that can be trusted. We need a conservative committed to the principles of our founding as you are. And
well,
I don't know whether we'll get that or not at this point, but I certainly hope that that's where it'll go. Go ahead,
Frank. Even when I ran, I was quietly encouraging people, vote for Dan Webster. He was the first Republican elected as Speaker of the House in Florida since Reconstruction.
Right.
And according to the people that were in the legislature at the time, he pushed all the power back to the members of the legislature. They got things done. They got more conservative bills passed. And we needed somebody like that, and still do. But this is a very dangerous, it's time, it's more of the same. But even some of us that were going, look, you know, it's a done deal. We've seen this before. Then AAF came out with the information that McCarthy's had a PAC, an organization that got millions of dollars from Sam FTX.
Let me come back to that, Congressman. We have to take another short break. We'll talk about that, and we'll talk about why it is so important that you have leadership in the House, because we don't have a friendly leader in the Senate Republicans, that's for sure. We'll be right back with more with Louie Gohmert right after this.
And throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa, provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
Welcome back. Louie Gohmert is in the House, I'm pleased to say, and not the House of Representatives, but in our House, virtually at least, and we're so pleased to have him with us. Congressman Gohmert, of course, has been a leader on so many things that we care about here at Securing America, and we regret very much his moving on from the House, but look forward to him in his next incarnation, continuing to contribute mightily. Congressman, I had to interrupt you because of that hard break. Just invite you to finish the thought about what it meant to you and others still serving in the House, I'm sure, when you discovered that this guy, Sam Bankman-Fried of FTX notoriety, was a campaign contributor to the PAC that the guy who wants to be Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy, was using for some rather nefarious purposes. Tell us about it.
Well, apparently he was trying to get Republicans elected and spending millions doing so, who he knew would vote for him for Speaker, rather than helping the best, most conservative, principled person get elected. He was working against principled Republicans. And that's caused a lot of people that were going, well, it's a foregone conclusion, he's going to be Speaker, to say, wait a minute, wait a minute, this is just wrong.
Wrong.
He's been taking money from what appears to be a criminal so that he could defeat, so he wouldn't help people who were principled and would help people instead that just would vote for him for speaker. That is wrong.
It is so wrong.
It'd been suspected for years, but now the proof was there.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the same thing was happening on the Senate side, apparently. Yeah. Mitch McConnell was doing it with his leadership PAC. And it brings up, you know, how important it is that you have real conservative principled leadership in the House of Representatives at the moment, because the Republicans in the Senate, as we just saw on this, I call it the omnivorous bill, because it seems to be eating up everything in sight, including our currency and our, economy and our freedoms, for that matter. The omnibus bill, engineered by Mitch McConnell with Chuck Schumer, yes, but apparently also with the connivance of Kevin McCarthy behind the scenes, even though he protested that he was opposed to it. But it seems as though, Louis, and I know you mourn as do I, the passing of one of the great intellects on our side of the football, Rich Higgins. And he frequently talked about the Republicans being the controlled opposition. And that certainly seems to be the case with McConnell, yes, for sure, and arguably McCarthy as well. Talk a little bit about what you see with McConnell and these 17 other Republican senators who voted essentially to deprive whoever was going to be running the House of Representatives in this Congress authority to do much because of the
Well, just yet another case of especially outgoing senators. Some of those guys were good, decent people, but it's this mentality, well, I'm going out. So, and it's the only time I've really taken hundreds of millions of dollars for, you know, my own pet projects, but I'd only do it once. So what could that hurt? The trouble is, Frank, every 2 years, there are people going out and people keep doing it sometimes every year. Mm-hmm. And it is bankrupting America. Yes. $1.7 trillion, and $1 trillion of that is heaped onto future generations. I mean, what this generation has done, and in my 18 years in Congress, is so immoral. Can you imagine going into a bank and saying, I need a loan because I can't control my spending? Well, what kind of security? Here are my children and grandchildren, and they'll stand good for it someday. I just can't control myself. We've never had a generation like that ever in the U.S. history that was, yes, we overspent when we were trying to win World War II, but then we got back on track after the war was won. This generation says, we don't care what we're heaping on our grandchildren, great-grandchildren, that it may just doom the country because we can't control it and we're going to have a good time right now. That is so immoral, and it is destructive of this country. And that kind of thinking has caused very nice conservative people to say, oh, what will it hurt? It's not that big a deal. And if I go along and get along on this, I'll get the committee I want and I will be chairman of that committee. But what they don't understand is when you sell your soul to get a chairmanship, you're not going to be worth having as chairman in the first place.
Yeah. Well, this brings us to a topic that I'm very keen to get your thoughts on, Congressman, because
thank you for bringing up Rich Higgins. Yeah. What a great American. Brilliant.
His loss
and McMaster's had him perp walked out of the White House.
He did, indeed.
Because he could see what needed to be done.
I think how different the course of the Trump administration might have been if his warnings at that time and afterwards were heeded. Yeah. Let me just ask you, Congressman, because I mean, several things that you talked about all sort of have a common denominator in a way, and that is that corruption is destroying our country. And whether it is the kind of venality that you just described and the wheeling and dealing internal to the Congress, or whether it's the corruption by foreign enemies of our country, notably the Chinese Communist Party, we're seeing a kind of, well, the Chinese call it elite capture, that is inducing people to put their own personal interests ahead of the national interests. One of the things I so admired about you through your career, I've been following it, was you didn't do that. You wouldn't think for a moment of doing that. And you were usually pretty forthright when you saw other people going along to get along in that fashion. I guess I would just ask you, especially given that you have a background in the United States Army, as well as during the Congress, focused on national security, among other things, what are we to make of the fact that we have a president of the United States who, as evidenced by Hunter Biden's laptop, among other things, is one of those who've been corrupted and captured and suborned by our mortal enemy, the Chinese Communist Party?
Well, it didn't happen overnight. It's like a line from the old Holiday Inn when the girl is kissing Bing Crosby and the other guy said, she must have been willing. Well, that's been the problem. We've had too many people that knew the right thing to do, but they were willing to do the wrong thing. Not that marrying Bing Crosby was the wrong thing in that movie, but it's what's happened. And I've seen it over and over. Good people that were standing with me saying, this is not right. We are going to bring, and then they get offered, you know, a chairmanship, this, that, or the other position of power. And
in the case of Biden, it seems tens of millions of dollars.
Yeah, well, yeah, we don't know how many millions of dollars. Interviewing Peter Schweitzer last week, and he was pointing these things out. It's on both sides of the aisle, but never quite as corrupt as the president of the United States. And I don't know how his mental acumen is right now. It certainly seems to be in great decline. We don't know how far down he's gone. But he's been taking money for years for pay to play. Right. And we know he's on video admitting that he held up money that was committed to support Ukraine until they fired the prosecutor that was coming after the folks that his son was involved with. I mean, he admitted all of that on video. This is a guy that should never been. and should never been elected president. But they were more interested in having a D in that position instead of an R. Mm-hmm. And it is costing the country. It's costing the world. I hear from, as I talk to legislators in other countries, and they're scared. Yeah. They're scared because they see the United States is in trouble of protecting its own freedom that has become very corrupt. They see how incompetent Biden is, even maybe that's a good thing, but except that it means somebody's running it that didn't get elected.
Right.
So it's just a very dangerous time.
Just to tie this all together, and I think those legislators that you're talking to are absolutely right, of course, because it's a threat to them.
Yeah.
If the United States is not only weakened or perceived to be irresolute, or simply ineffectual on behalf of its own national security interests, because that ripples through the rest of the world, but that it's doing it at the very moment that the Chinese Communist Party is on the march.
Yep.
And it's got its problems to be sure, but unfortunately those problems, I fear, make more likely the respond by trying to find some external threat by their continued control and power. Congressman, that's a thought to which we're going to return momentarily with you. We have to take just one more break. When we do come back, I want to visit with you about something else that the Chinese have unleashed, and that would be a biological warfare attack against our country. I'll be right back on that and more with the great Louis Gohmert right after this. Thanks for tuning in to Securing America with me, Frank Gaffney. If you find the contents of this program to be informative and valuable, I'd like to ask you to consider playing a part in supporting the organization that makes Securing America possible, our Center for Security Policy. We call the center the home of the special forces in the war of ideas. We feature such warriors daily on Securing America as they diagnose the dangers facing our nation, develop strategies for thwarting them, and work with other veteran national security practitioners, legislators, and the American people to execute those strategies. Thanks to our friends at Salem Media, we're able to expand greatly awareness of the Center for Security Policy's efforts and their impact. Like the real special forces, our effectiveness depends on having the ammunition, in our case, money, to perform our mission. Please consider making a tax-deductible contribution at securefreedom.org. Thanks. Welcome back. We're having a splendid conversation with a dear friend and much admired public official of great distinction, the Honorable Louis Gohmert, until today, the representative of the people of the First District of Texas and a representative of the best in America on an ongoing basis, I'm happy to say. Congressman, I just wanted to pivot to something that has made clear the malign intent and the murderous effects of the Chinese Communist Party's unrestricted warfare against our country, namely a manifestation of that warfare in the form of a biological attack. We did a book earlier this year, I think you know, entitled The Sea is at War with America. And it talks about how the Chinese developed this virus in a laboratory. There's no evidence of the alternative, the natural occurrence. We're not quite sure how it got out, but once it got out, we know they moved it to this country and elsewhere around the world, even as they're doing now with this new pandemic. When you look at this, sir, and especially when you look at what was done in response to the pandemic, the adoption of what the Chinese call the China model of lockdowns and mask mandates and vaccine, so-called vaccine mandates, this really strikes me as all the proof one needs that we are dealing with an enemy that is prepared to stop at nothing to achieve the defeat of this country. Would you agree?
Yes, I would. And, you know, it is interesting, too, that Fauci back in 2017 was telling us that we were going to have a pandemic, that the Trump administration was going to have a pandemic within the next few years. And man,
lo and behold,
it was as if he knew something was going on and was not clairvoyant, but knew exactly what was coming.
Well, I think responsible is the word you were looking for, sir.
Well, but if
at least in part,
for those who want to defend China and say, no, this was it was nothing intentional. Well, as a former prosecutor, I would submit that when they knew that the virus was getting out and they had planes that were taking off international targets from Wuhan area, and they knew they had some taking off for domestic locations within China itself, for them to ground the ones that were going to stay in China, and it would mean Wuhan virus going all over China. They ground those, but they tell the ones going internationally, go ahead and take this virus, you know, take these passengers, was the same thing as saying, take this virus and kill people in other countries. Instead of saying, we're going to restrict everything, local travel, we're going to restrict international, they were okay sending it. To me, that was an act of war against the world.
I agree. And you know, the other part of it was, of course, that they would vitriolically attack anybody who said, hey, wait a minute, we're not letting those planes land in our country,
right?
Which Donald Trump, to his credit,
he did
do. And, you know, interestingly enough, I was just listening to an NPR program this morning in which they were talking about how ineffectual travel restrictions are when you're facing this kind of pandemic, and how we ought to just be letting this new horde of Chinese, you know, travel, whatever they've got going on there now, to this country. It's mind-numbing. But let me just ask you more broadly, Congressman, because I know you've been following this closely as a major public policy problem. But when you look at what we've been learning about not only the failure of the big pharma, you know, medical enterprise, if you will, the security state, public partnership. We've really been had on both the effects of these so-called vaccines, the really gene therapies, of course, but also we've been really misled about how dangerous they are. And the question is, are we going to see this repeat if we get back into the mode that there's a pandemic come from China and we need to start locking down again? We need to start making people wear masks and keep their kids out of school and take a jab. Is that in prospect, sir?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, it is a potential prospect. I was shocked how quickly people said, oh, shut down my business. Okay. Oh, introduce some untested shot stuff into my system, my own body. Oh, sure.
On multiple occasions.
Yeah, on multiple occasions. It was unbelievable to me.
How about closing my church, among other things?
Yeah, for the first time in the history of North America, you had churches shut down in a time when people in every other part of our history would have been rushing there to pray.
You bet.
And I would submit the last place that should have been closed. Mm-hmm. But it's what happened. And it was unbelievable. And I think it's New Hampshire, isn't it, that has the state slogan, live free or die.
Yes.
And there wasn't any of that around the country. There were people going, okay. Yeah, I'll give up my freedom completely. Let the government tell me when I can go out, if I can go out, whether I go bankrupt in my business. The government gets to tell me everything. Unbelievable to me how quickly people just caved in and said, okay. All they had to do was say, no, this isn't right. And it would have scared the politicians right out of doing the dictatorial things they were doing.
Exactly. But again, this was the China model.
Yeah.
This was part of what was imported along with the disease, was the response to it. And Tony Fauci, as you know, shortly before he finally left the building, acknowledged that there was no scientific basis for all of these lockdowns and other mandates. And this is just such a travesty.
Well, he's acknowledged.
We have to take one last break.
Yeah.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back with more with Louis Gohmert. And we're going to talk about, among other things, one of the other effects of the China model, defeating Donald Trump. Stay tuned. Thank you. Welcome back to this final installment of this wonderful conversation with a man I admire greatly, former Congressman, now former Congressman Louie Gohmert of Texas. And Congressman, one of the things that I know you've been passionate about, as you have about so many things that are really important in our country, is election integrity. You understand, having run now both as a judge and as a congressman for many years, the importance of free and fair elections. And I know you know so well that back in 2005, former President Jimmy Carter and former Secretary of State James Baker convened a bipartisan commission and found that mail-in ballots, absentee ballots and so on, were forms for fraud. And yet, as a result of this pandemic and the Chinese model being applied, one of the upshots of it was we had states all over the country adopting this fraud-ridden practice, with, it seems, among other things, the effect of defeating Donald Trump. Do you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. And in fact, when I first ran for Congress, one of the biggest Democrat donors had a problem with their Democrat incumbent. And he said, hey, I've been paying a lady to vote for 1,200 to 1,500 different people. She would get them to sign a form requesting a mail-in ballot absentee. Mm-hmm. And when she got them, she would vote every one of them. And he said, I would pay her for every ballot that she voted. And as long as they were all Democrats that got voted on that. So that was 12 to 1500 votes in one county. So yeah, that was nothing new. It certainly
and a lot of these races are decided by
100 or less
of votes. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. And so 1500 votes can throw an election big time. So it's been going on. We've known that it was a problem. And in fact, I asked a Republican county clerk back at the time, has that been going on? And she said, oh yeah, one time she voted every one of her ballots in green, so there was no question that she voted them so she could get paid. So it's gone on. And we've known how vulnerable mail-in ballots are, even more so drop-off ballots at an uncontrolled, unsupervised, unwitnessed drop box.
Well, and that have been sent to millions of people without them even asking for them on top of it. Chain of custody and so on. I mean, these are technical terms that just further make the point that if you don't follow some sort of sensible rules, you get fraud. And again, China was an interesting, it's fair to say, in the defeat of Donald Trump in this election race. And to not only get him out of office and to get a guy who our colleague Sam Faddis, a former CIA undercover operative, has described as a controlled asset of the Chinese Communist Party as a successor. I mean, it's just been, you know, payday big time for the Chinese. So Congressman, as you look at this, we've gone through a litany of really serious challenges facing our country, from enemies foreign and, I would argue, domestic. As we talked about at the very beginning, you've repeatedly sworn an oath to protect our country against both. What advice do you have for our audience, reflecting back on your long experience in government and looking forward to the challenges ahead? What must we now be doing?
We got to, well, for one thing, those that are in office for the next 2 years need to be hearing from people constantly. Emails, phone calls, you know, letters.
Does it make a difference?
It does make a difference, but, you know, especially it does to more than you would think. And in fact, when people hear, oh, I've gotten 1,000 phone calls over this, as long as they're from different people that were from their district or their state, it scares them. And they know they're headed for trouble. And I've seen it too many times where somebody that was sold out and was lockstep with the Speaker of the House or the Republican leader of the Senate would have to go and say, look, I know I said I would support this, but I will not be back if I do. So I'll hold up. They'll say, I'll hold up my vote till the very end so I don't hurt you early on, but I can't vote for this. I've seen it. I've heard it.
Is it true as well that there's a multiplier of some kind that when you're sitting there watching those things come in that you assume there's an awful lot more out there that feel that way who haven't written?
Yes, that's what you figure. But it does make a difference. And there's a multiplier effect also among other members or other senators that see what's happening to another senator and going, oh, I don't want to have that happen to me. So I'm not going to be able to do this. So it does make a difference. But one of the things, as Rush Limbaugh had pointed out, you know, he had sponsors that would hear from millions of people and they would back off or cancel their sponsorship, that kind of thing. So Rush really drilled down and found out there was only a handful of people that had figured out a way to electronically overwhelm a sponsor not to support or sponsor Rush Limbaugh or conservatives.
Bots in the social media.
And that's what we're up against. That's why the phone calls from real people that are not the same person calling all the time that confirm, you know, they are from your district. You count on those and it makes a difference.
Congressman, I want to say you've made a difference in the course of all of these years. And I also wanted to say, at least passing, that I so admire the woman who was at your side for much of that as your chief of staff, Connie Hare.
She's amazing.
The two of you made an amazing pair, and we thank you for the services that you have rendered to, well, not just the people of the First District. I think it's fair to say, not just to the people of Texas more generally, but to all of us. And I hope that we will have many, many occasions in the future to thank you for all of that and to welcome your continuing contributions to the well-being of our country.
God bless you, my friend. And thanks for all your fight. I'm still in the fight. It'll just be a different venue. So thank you. Thanks so much.
And God bless you for that. Thanks to all of you for being with us and in the fight. Come back for more tomorrow. Until then, go forth and multiply.